Hey, welcome back to Two Mics. We appreciate you coming back. You know, there's a lot of podcasts out there and there's a lot of good news and fake news and every kind of news you can think about. But we do appreciate you coming back to visit Two Mics. We try to make it entertaining, but also educational, knowledge you need to know, in the know, when you got to know, and who knows what you know, right? So anyway, we thank you for coming back. Don't forget to go to twomics.us. Visit our sponsors. We have some great sponsors up there. Ira the Mensch from the Bench, gold now more than ever. EMP Shield, Putin approved, Eastern Bloc told us. And Cambridge, you know, for you young guys out there, we hear about financial crisis. Go to Cambridge Credit Counseling, just click the link. And it's not a ripoff. They're going to give you good information, educational, on how you can get out of some of this debt or, you know, consolidate it. And you're going to need to do that, whether it's a school loan, home loan, credit cards, you know, everybody's using a lot of them now, right? Joe Biden's economy. Yeah. And then Jamie Dimon just picked up another fire sale bank. So visit the website, twomics.us. You can go down there and make comments. We want to say hi to Dave, this week's special comment. Hey, Dave, you need to get back on Rumble and throw a few comments because we need some more. I think we need another 1,000 subscribers on Rumble. But don't forget to go to networkradio.us, subscribe there too. Let's say hello around the globe. Saudi Arabia, you know we need the oil. Get in touch with us. We got monopoly money down in Virginia. And Chile, Portugal, Brazil, Thailand, Taiwan, mainland China. How you doing? Noodles for everybody. And guess who's on board with us now? Israel, the chosen. Well, I can't say anything in Israeli, so I'll just say Hava Nagila. All right, so there we are. We did the globe. Welcome. Here's another great podcast. Five, four, three, two, one. Hey, welcome back. You're on Two Mics. Dr. Michael Scheuer, New York Times bestselling author, and Colonel Mike, who never wrote a book. And before we get to today's guest, don't forget it's Two Mics, TWOMics.us, TWOMics.us. Ira is waiting to hear from you. Listen, you know what the deal is with the dollar. So go to ourgoldguy.com. Just hit the gold bar right there on the website. Fill out the form. He'll call you back anytime, whenever. He's on the West Coast, so he gets up early for East Coast people. You may want to get into some metals now more than ever. And also, click EMP Shield. Say hello to the guys in Kansas. It's made in Kansas, sold in Kansas. We want to say hello to Shady, Andrew, Amber, Erica, the whole gang. Listen, just look at the items and call as customer service. You're not going to get this from Discover Card, American Express. The best customer service, AT&T, Verizon. Nobody can compare with EMP Shield. Now, I'm telling you, that's a fact. Just call up the company, speak to them. They're the nicest people to go over everything with you. And it's probably the best product because right now we hear from the Eastern Bloc countries in Europe that even Putin is talking about EMP Shield on Two Mics. So you may want to get it. All right, let's go right to the guest on today with us from Euroland in Poland. Mike Krupa is back. And we're a little late for the second anniversary or whatever it is in Ukraine, Mike, so you can brief us on that and what's going on with Poland and what's going on with Germany and NATO. And let's get the magic wand. Let's go. Go ahead, Mike Krupa. Welcome back.
Wow, that's a busload. That's a lot is happening. A lot is happening. Thankfully, the war is still confined only to Ukraine, although the economic war, which is being waged, is obviously touching upon the European Union and countries even outside the European Union who decided to join the anti-Russian crusade, such as Switzerland, for example, which has unfortunately dropped the pretense of being a neutral country. But in general, I think we can say, and you know, the recent leaks that were produced by apparently one Air Force National Guardsman named Jack Teixeira, if I remember correctly, his name and surname. you know, I've heard a lot of discussions as to the veracity of these documents, whether they're real, whether this is a controlled leak and so on. I'm of the opinion that they are real, that they do show the real state of the Ukrainian armed forces and the inadequate support structure that the West has prepared for Ukraine for this war. And if you look at those documents, well, you can see where this war is heading in terms of the burn ratio, the replenishment rates, in terms of the equipment that is being sent to Ukraine, in terms of the intelligence that is being provided to the Americans from the Ukrainian side, which grossly underestimates, in my opinion, and in the opinion of other illustrious experts such as Colonel Douglas McGregor and others, the real casualty numbers on the Ukrainian side, which I would say actually are in the range of somewhere between 200,000 and 250,000 dead at this point, around 300,000 injured. We can see just from those leaks that this war, in terms of the kinetic aspect, is a losing proposition for the West, but also in terms of the economic aspect, which is being talked about not so much in the leaks, but in the press. For example, I've noticed that Bloomberg, I think, has become an outpost of Russian propaganda, because they're doing really great reporting on how the energy sector is being taken over by the Saudis, by OPEC Plus and Russia, which basically testifies to how, you know, how great the sanctions are working against Moscow, which has come out to be a total farce. So just to sum it up, we've actually become worse for it in terms of our economies and in terms of our militaries, and in terms of our strategic position, Europe as a whole, I mean, since we had our first discussion, I believe, in June of 2022 last year. So the war is not going well. The situation in and around Bakhmut, or Artemovska, some call it, with Wagner basically bleeding the Ukrainian armed forces white, is becoming more and more apparent. And the question of the so-called spring offensive, which everybody seems to be talking about, has more and more question marks around it, because in order to conduct an effective offensive, not only do you have to penetrate the three Russian defensive lines that have already been built, but you have to have the proper equipment and the proper force structure to do that. So I think time is on Russia's side still. The West, the collective West, especially Europe is losing. And sane voices like Viktor Orban's, for example, are still in the minority. But thankfully, they are getting louder and louder.
And the French, for whatever reason, are also a little unhappy with their government. So in a derivative way, I think that's probably a good thing at this time.
Indeed. Those famous words that were spoken by Macron after his visit with the Chinese emperor, Xi Jinping, they highlight the fact that Macron has been talking about for some years now about the concept of European autonomy. He called NATO brain dead once, which played fairly well with Trump's whole message of getting out of NATO and NATO as a defunct organization, which in essence it is. But Macron, after meeting with Xi Jinping, said that Europe needs strategic autonomy, that we should not be joining Washington's crusade in the war against China, that we should have our own strategic thought, and that we should prepare the ground for peace negotiations regarding Ukraine. And immediately he was anathemized by all the Western pundits. I was spending Easter weekend at my in-laws, and I happened to do something which I usually don't do. I turn on Polish state television, which is basically television for the stupid. But I did watch a news segment there, and they called, you guessed it, they called Macron the appeaser Chamberlain. Where have we heard this before? 1938 again. Oh my God, he's giving it in to Putin, and he wants to betray Europe, whereas our heroic Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki is saying, no, we don't need to cut our reliance on Washington. We need a strong American-European partnership, which basically means the boot of the Washington deep state trampling for more and more years on the heads of the Europeans. But I don't think anything concrete will come out of what Macron has said, because he's made these statements before. But when it comes to actually, you know, putting pedal to the metal, Macron always backs down. I mean, let's not forget, during the last couple of months, he's been all out for Ukraine. I mean, he said some really stupid things, and the amount of weaponry and weapons that Macron has sent to Ukraine is fairly large. Although he's had some misgivings that he hasn't been maybe as extreme as some of the Eastern European countries, including Poland. But I think, for example, if France took the line of Viktor Orban at the beginning of this conflict, and France is still an important player in Europe, whether we like it or not, we might have ended this war quicker. So, you know, he can speak now about European autonomy, but it's like, hey, Emmanuel, monsieur, where were you, you know, 5, 6, 7 months ago? I mean, it was obvious from the start where this war was headed. And French still have a competent intelligence service, and I've heard a lot of rumblings from my sources that a lot of French officers, French intelligence sources, former French intelligence sources have been saying the same thing. This war will be lost by Ukraine. Russia will win. We need a new European security architecture for Europe that includes and doesn't exclude Moscow.
Hey, gang, don't forget. There it is. You see it up there, Network Radio. You click over there and then you subscribe. Okay. When you subscribe, you'll get the email. The new show is out. Don't forget, when you go on the website on twomikes.us, you click on the Apple there. For you Apple listeners on Apple Podcasts, it's right there on the website, twomikes.us. Click right there. It'll take you right to Apple, and it'll take you right to Network Radio. It'll take you right to Rumble. Hey, if you like Rumble and you like the videos, and a lot of people do, that's great. You know what? Just click whatever it is that they like. I think it's an algorithm thing. You know, we went from 60,000 to 30,000 to 10,000. We're down to whatever. I don't know if we're being banned, shadow banned, ghost ridden, canceled, woke. I don't know what they're doing to us, but Rumble is not our best place to be anymore. So, you know, if you like the video, Network Radio's up fast. And then Freedom and everybody else gets in, Spotify, Pandora, you know, there's so many. Whatever you're listening to, fine, just click on it. But if you want to subscribe and get the newest and the latest and the greatest, you go to Network Radio, bam, and then you go to the website, click Apple. If you're on Apple Podcasts and you're around the globe, click Apple on the twomikes.us. I think I said it right, twomikes.us. Yeah, that's us, twomikes.us. Hey, thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. Don't forget, you can always email and comment. Don't forget to read the blog. We put up some things every couple of days, I guess, Dr. Mike and I. So again, enjoy the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's, you know, that's pretty commonsensical. I hope, I don't know what to think. What does Poland think? You know, I have no qualms about the fact that Russians are very unpopular in Poland for historical reasons. And in Finland. But why, with that clear view, and they must know that the United, this is not 1945. The United States is broken. The military is broken. They're being queerified. And what in the world, why don't those governments pick up on that? All of NATO, really, but the Poles are so self-reliant, and the Finns, and now they've got themselves into this quagmire of, you know, with really no cavalry coming from the 48 states anytime soon, unless it's nuclear.
Yeah, I think it's two factors. I think we even discussed this before. I once alluded to the sort of solidarity mindset that still is prevalent among a lot of the Polish elite, whereby, you know, the 1980s are calling in. They want their foreign policy back, as Barack Obama once said to Mitt Romney. And I think it's true, because if you look at the terminology that is being utilized by the Polish president, the Polish government, I mean, a lot of what is being said is taken straight out of the Cold War playbook. So we're using terms like the free world, for example, Russian imperialism. Some people are still calling Russia the Soviet Empire. They're calling Putin a communist, you know, an ex-KGB. So that fits well with a certain mindset that was formed in the 1980s, whereby now the historical mission of Poland is to be the one who takes vengeance on Russia for all the misdeeds and evils that we've experienced at their hands. And the only country, excuse me, just have to turn off my watch. And the only country that's willing to help us in this is obviously the United States of America, which is the shining city on the hill in this ideological construct, whereby they still believe that it's 1980s. You have Ronald Reagan in the White House, and it's a fairly primitive mindset, because if you look at it from a purely historical standpoint, after 1989, we made up formally with the Germans. There is no hatred of Germany in Poland currently. And I mean, I'm not going to list all the atrocities that the Germans committed against Poland during World War II, or even before. I mean, we were partitioned not only by the Russians, we were also partitioned by the Prussians. We have a lot of bad blood between Poland and Germany, but you don't see the same level of animosity towards Germans as you see towards Russians, which is a sort of paradox, because if you consider the period after 1945, whatever one thinks of the Polish People's Republic that existed up until pretty much 1990, 1991, we had a functioning state. We had industry. It was an imperfect state. We had a lot of limited sovereignty, but we had a demographic boom. This country, in many ways, was more sovereign than it is right now under the occupation of the European Union. And we have come to, at least the people who think in Poland, we have come to realize that in a way, and I'm only speaking for myself right now, so I hope this statement isn't misconstrued, but a lot of the input that the Soviet Union gave to Poland after 1945, including the guaranteeing of our Western border, the putting of Poland under the Soviet nuclear umbrella, the rebuilding of Poland, which could only have happened with Soviet, i.e. Russian support, that in a way, as I said, I don't want the statement to be misconstrued, compensates for much of the evil that was done to Poland by the Russian and Soviet hands. So as again, I'm not saying the communist or socialist period in Poland was perfect, but if you look at history in terms of what happened after 1956, when we had, in effect, Polish communist but nationalist communists ruling Poland, who slowly, as time went on, wanted to build up Polish autonomy and move away from the Soviet Union. Obviously, they couldn't do it, you know, from day to day. This would take a while. But for example, during the tenure of the Edward Gierek, who was the head of the Communist Party in the 1970s, we were building a fairly autonomous position in Eastern Europe. I mean, we had visits from Richard Nixon. Edward Gierek met with Jimmy Carter in the White House, with Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford visited Poland. So even though we were in the Soviet camp, we were in essence building an autonomous Polish position. And remember, we didn't have, for example, collective farms like they did in the Soviet Union. That was a big achievement of the Polish communists, who, however evil they were able to exert on Stalin the fact that, no, if you bring in collectivization in Poland, you're going to have a revolution on your hand. So if you look at the nuances sometimes, one can understand that there was a lot of evil done during the communist period, but a lot of that was elevated in a propagandistic way after 1989, I believe, for strategic aims, for Poland to be used by the Washington deep state, by the neocons, as this anti-Russian Rottweiler that willingly takes up the mission of, you know, trying to strategically weaken or defeat Russia or bring about the color revolution in Moscow that so many of them want. So that's, in a nutshell, if that is a nutshell, is the reason why such hatred for Russia prevails in the mind of the Polish government and, unfortunately, in large segments of Polish society.
It's understandable historically, but not invincibly understanding. Finland, it seems to me that the Finns really were made asses of. Bringing them into NATO, it seems to me as though they were brought in to give another strategic challenge to Putin that I don't know how long he'll tolerate. You know, I looked it up after the day they came in, and it's Finland is 207 air miles from St. Petersburg. You know, how can the Russians tolerate that?
Right. Well, if you know, Professor Richard Sakwa wrote this book a few years back, just after the Maidan color revolution, called I forgot the title now, but it's a book basically about Frontline Ukraine is the title. And he makes the following statement in that book, and I thought it's fascinating, because he says that NATO expansion is always justified by this reasoning whereby we have to expand NATO because of a danger that was created by a former NATO expansion. So for example, it's a self-perpetuating sort of mechanism in a way. And if you look at the Finns right now, I mean, in terms of their military prowess, which is fairly, to say it modestly, fairly weak, at least in compared to the Russian Goliath, the only thing that they've really done for themselves is created a problem, because now there's going to be a new Russian army grouping along the Finnish-Russian border. The Russians obviously are not going to tolerate NATO forces in such close proximity to Vladimir Putin's hometown of St. Petersburg. I mean, it would be the exact same situation if the People's Liberation Army began installing themselves along the, you know, the Canadian-American border or the American-Mexican border. These things you do not do to great powers. It's a strategic imperative. This is pure and sheer stupidity. But the signals that I'm getting from some of my Finnish sources is that a lot of Finns are very bitter at the government that by the way, has just collapsed because a new one has been elected in, and the former dancing and cocaine smoking prime minister, I think she's like just over 30, has been dumped, is the fact that there was no referendum on this issue. Yeah. And I've noticed that one of the reasons, and in Poland, we had the same situation. Now, obviously, public opinion and public support for NATO in 1999 was fairly large. I don't dispute that. But I mean, such a strategic decision, at least you should put it to the vote, because you're opening up a new potential war front with a country that can obliterate you literally within 10 minutes. But nobody gave any thought to that, you know? And Finland was always a bastion of neutral understanding and diplomacy. And just a reminder, I mean, the only summit that took place between Vladimir Putin and President Trump took place in Helsinki. It was a fairly successful summit, in my opinion. It was later misconstrued, obviously, as, you know, Trump giving in to Putin and so on and so on. We literally had signals there of a real, true, serious detente, which unfortunately was destroyed later by the inner workings of a lot of, you know, people stabbing Trump in the back, in the White House, in the media. But I mean, Finland always had the status of a respectable country where, you know, engaged parties can go and conduct business on neutral ground. That's gone now. That's gone now, and the Russians are not going to forget this. Especially, it was only due to the goodness of Russian hearts that Finland exists as a country. Finns have a short memory, but I think Vladimir Putin will bring them back to their senses. Hopefully, not in a kinetic way, but with a force buildup that is already taking place up there at the Russian-Finnish border.
All right, we got Ira on the line with us. Two mics, Dr. Mike, Colonel Mike. When they go to our website, it's ourgoalguy.com. You click on it, then you fill out, you just tell them, hey, it's two mics. You'll see this, you'll see the form. Just fill it out with your name, your address. Your name and your email and phone number. And Ira gets back to you. We don't know anything he's doing with you. All we do is we accept, and we get it all the time. We get great comments. We get great emails. Hey, thanks, you know, for sending us to ourgoalguy.com, Ira. Everybody, and we've, over the last couple of years, Mike and I have been pretty impressed with the comments and emails, but not just that, Ira. We've had a couple of big players. Like some people say, hey, man, we bought a bunch of this stuff and he was so good and the price was right and there was no pressure, you know, and you don't make a big markup and you don't do all this razzle dazzle that you hear. I mean, I hear all these commercials now and I'm like, man, I wish these people would go our goalguy.com on the twomikes.us website. And, you know, save themselves a bunch of, because if you buy in from some of these people, there's a big markup. And then you, by the time you break even, who knows, you know, we've had nobody, Ira, this is true. Nobody in the 2 years you've been with us that complained and said, oh my gosh, I hate that guy. Nobody, no, it was all good comments. And I mean, we've had about, I don't know, maybe close to 75 comments. And I know there was many more buyers than that, but 75 people commented. So we really want to thank you for being on as our sponsor for the last 2 years.
Sir, I don't even want to interrupt because you guys are going and going, and I think it's great. Continue, please, Mike.
I had one more, lower level question, Mike. What are you hearing from the pulpit, from the Catholic Church on Ukraine? You know, we're stuck in a groove here. Mm-hmm. That every week it's more and more support for Ukraine and I don't know what to make of it.
Unfortunately, it's the same in Poland. I attended a mass on Sunday in Warsaw, And despite the fact that it was a Latin mass, which is the only kind of mass I attend, the priest during the homily made this allusion when he discussed war to the so-called way of conducting war by the Ruski Mir. And the Ruski Mir is, in loose translation, basically the Russian world. So he was obviously alluding to the supposed Russian barbaric way of conducting war. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not disputing that there are no war crimes being committed on both sides during this war. It's war. These things happen. But the level of unbalanced and biased characterization of Russia as this barbaric orc army that is only founded on committing war crimes, that's the only reason why the Russians advance forward. Well, we obviously know where that's coming from. But in terms of the centralized Catholic Church, in terms of Pope Francis, I think whatever else one can say about Pope Francis in terms of his clear modernism in issues pertaining to dogma, liturgy, Catholic morals, and so on, he did make a few statements in the last year whereby he called upon the Russians and the Ukrainians to sit down. I think there were even mediation attempts made by the Vatican diplomacy, which I don't think any of the two sides have taken seriously, but at least they were there. Pope Francis has been going back and forth. In my opinion, if we still had Benedict XVI at the helm in the Vatican, who, by the way, I know had deep respect for Vladimir Putin. And if you read the condolences which were sent from the Kremlin just after Benedict XVI's death, they were written in a language that signaled that this statement was written by Christians, because a lot of the condolences that would come to the Vatican after Pope's death, at least in recent years, would be of, you know, he was a great speaker, he talked about peace, and he was a great theologian, which is what basically came out of the White House. But Vladimir Putin wrote the following, and this is almost a direct quote, whereby he said, "We remember Benedict XVI as a great defender of traditional Christian values." You know, those three words, traditional Christian values, could be overlooked, you know, saying, oh, anybody could have written that. Well, no. I didn't see anybody else write that. I only saw Vladimir Putin write that. By the way, who's an Orthodox Christian, not a Catholic, whereas the supposed Catholic in the White House spoke about everything except the fact that Benedict XVI was the head of the Catholic Church and was tasked with feeding the sheep of Christ in reference to the to Scripture. So I believe the there's a big mess in the Vatican diplomacy. In terms of the Polish hierarchy, it's very Russophobic. You will not find any priests who talk, I'm not even saying, you know, in any positive way about what the Russians did, but at least in a sort of balanced way whereby we should end this war. Our goal should be peace because people are dying every day in great numbers. And one other thing I'd like to mention, one of the reasons why there's such apathy in this regard and such clear-cut anti-Russianism is because a huge majority of the Greek Catholic or Uniate Catholic population in Ukraine, which is the sort of Eastern Catholics, so they have an Eastern rite, but they're under the Pope, they're recognized as jurisdiction. A lot of these Eastern Ukrainian Catholics at the same time support the Banderist ideology. So Stepan Bandera, neo-Nazism, and the things we talked about during our first meeting. So the literal Nazification of Ukraine. In essence, they put Stepan Bandera, the great Ukrainian neo-Nazi leader who was an ally of Adolf Hitler, and Jesus Christ on the same sort of stage. They're equal in many ways. Which is obviously a blasphemy, but it's been ingrained so much into the mentality of a lot of Ukrainian Catholics that it's hard to uproot. So if you combine that with Polish Russophobia, which seems obviously into the clergy, well, you get an explosive situation. So I don't think I think we have a similar situation here in Poland and in the United States with some fairly weak propositions of diplomacy coming from the Vatican, but nothing of the sort that I would expect, for example, if Benedict XVI was still around.
Yeah. You know, the one final thing before I drive you crazy with questions.
Go ahead. I want to ask you one, by the way, too. Go ahead, Mike.
It seems to me that if people, when this was all developing and the way they were treating regarding Putin, do you remember when Putin was, he hadn't been in power all that long, but he had I think, 4 or 5 different long sessions with Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
Yes.
And he spoke, and what was reported about what they spoke about and the questions Putin answered almost made it look like Putin was the student and he had gone to learn. Now, everyone will say that's not, you know, that's just an act. He's a KGB guy and all of this stuff. But it struck me Solzhenitsyn is not a guy to play. I don't think he was a man who put up with fools very, very well. And he criticized Putin at times, but other times he was very, not effusive at all, but very strongly he said these were worthwhile discussions. I don't know where that history goes.
I think if you were around today, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, he would be a supporter of the special military operation. I have no doubt about that. Not a doubt. So I think he would be excommunicated by all the polite and elitist people of the world fairly quickly. I'm not an expert in Solzhenitsyn. I've read one of his books about Jewish-Russian relations, which I highly recommend. It's a 2-volume piece called 200 Years Together. Very fascinating read. But I think the reason why, after his return to Russia, he was so open to meeting with Vladimir Putin was, I think he saw in him a genuine Russian patriot, somebody who obviously had his faults. But in comparison to old drunk Boris from the 90s, who shelled the Russian parliament, who was basically reelected with CIA help in 1996, and I remind you, Time magazine was very open about how certain people from the States helped to engineer his reelection. And the economic calamities of the 1990s, where people were scraping basically the bottom, especially during the end of the 1990s, and obviously the humiliation, which was the Kosovo campaign, where Russia was, they were only limited to diplomatic protests, but they really couldn't do anything. I remember that Foreign Minister Primakov, who was on his way to Washington at that time, told the pilot of his plane to turn around on the Atlantic and fly back to Moscow as soon as the bombings of Yugoslavia began. So I think it's sort of like, remember when George W. Bush met Vladimir Putin and they had their first summit in Slovenia? And one of the reporters asked, what do you think of the man? And, you know, Bush in his tone of voice, I looked him in the eye and I saw, and I got a feeling for his soul. I got a sense of his soul. And everybody was laughing about that. But I think in a good way, Solzhenitsyn looked in Putin's eyes and also got a sense of his soul, that here he's dealing with a person who is a patriot, wants to rebuild Russia, wants to rebuild the state, and wants to do everything to protect the Russian state from disintegrating, which was, let's say it openly, one of the goals of the neocons and a lot of deep state elements in Washington during the 1990s. As a matter of fact, Dick Cheney, this was 1991, I think, and I think Bob Gates relays this in his book Duty, Memoirs of a Secretary at War. He quotes Cheney as saying that right now, after the Soviet Union has collapsed, we should do everything to help Russia collapse also. Now, obviously, the Russian intelligence got wind of statements like this. They knew where the trajectory was going. And I think Solzhenitsyn realized that there's only one man in Russia who could stop this, only one man who has the authority, the experience, the know-how, the knowledge, and the determination to keep Russia as a viable, great power, doing good things in the world, animated by sort of Christian Orthodox conservative spirit. And that man was Vladimir Putin. So I think that was the main aim of his meetings with him. You wanted to get a sort of a feel for the man, but you're right. I'm pretty sure Putin learned a lot from him also, in the sense of putting the country on a decisively conservative trajectory, in the sense that, no, we don't want Russia to be another country, which has been, you know, another, we don't want Russia to become Mech Russia. We want Russia to remain Russia. So in essence, I would say Putin was a sort of Russian Donald Trump. Let's make Russia great again, and had a sort of even Reagan-esque edge to him, in the sense that, you know, I don't apologize for making Russia great again. So that's how I see it.
Yeah. It's, it, you know, well, you look around the world and there isn't very many adults running countries. There's Orban, there's Putin, and that's about, and perhaps us when Trump was president. But right now, the children of the 80s or the 70s are now in charge, and they behave exactly like children.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes when I see Ursula von der Leyen, and I think it was, I mean, I know you guys have a sort of different take on the Chinese because of how China has taken over the states in many ways. But I mean, come on, you have to admit it. It was beautiful the way they treated Ursula von der Leyen. You know, she flew in on a regular airlines plane to China. She flew out. Xi Jinping kept her at a distance on that big table just to show her that, you know, the Chinese talk to leaders of nation states. They don't, you know, treat seriously people who represent such funny and clownish institutions as the European Union. So that, in a way, I think shows that at least the Chinese have a serious approach to policy and to politics on the world stage. Whereas, you know, Ursula von der Leyen is exactly that. She is, you know, she's a flower child. She represents all the idealistic and BS approaches of a generation that only wants to consume, have anal sex, and you know, and watch Netflix, pretty much.
Yeah, and that's life.
And that's life. C'est la vie, exactly.
Well, pretty soon, Mike, I think pretty soon is going to be bestiality too.
Yeah. Well, it's coming. It's really coming
downhill. Yeah.
Yeah, by the way, I wanted to, since I have you, Mike, Dr. Mike, are you aware of recent documents that have surfaced, which have been put out by the Florida Bulldog? This is completely not relating to Russia right now, by the Florida Bulldog about 9/11 by one Donald C. Canestraro, who worked on the military commission?
Uh-huh. No, I have not.
Okay, I'll send you the PDF in email after, but it's very interesting. I remember one of the first interviews we had about 2 years ago for Media Narodova, we discussed the issue of why it was that, you know, people such as Omar al-Bayoumi could be running around the West Coast, and Nawaf al-Hazmi and Khalid al-Midar just flew in, and they were, you know, they had a very surprisingly easy way of moving around the United States. It's a very interesting read. It's 22 pages. It was published as a part of a discovery during the Office of Military Commissions, which are taking place in Guantanamo. I'll forward you the relevant info through Colonel Mike.
Mm-hmm. That happens. That happens because the FBI lets it happen.
Yeah,
and the immigration mm-hmm. people let it happen.
Yep.
And it's, you know, they say, well, we never expected somebody to fly a plane, and we captured documents in the Philippines in 1995 that showed like six or eight pilots being trained for 747s in the United States.
Mm-hmm. In Florida, Mike, they were flying down in Florida. Yeah,
that's exactly right. It's if the American people knew, and I hope they do, you know, the 9/11 Commission report was redacted until death, but it was still a deadly spear headed mm-hmm. toward the American government. And they were supposed to 5 years or 10 years after the commission, they're supposed to release that, and they never have.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we're watching here. And I was a strong believer that it was not any influence in the United States. But in retrospect, as more and more information comes out, in my own experience of having 10 opportunities at least to kill him, capture him, it becomes, in my mind, possible that they wanted him alive to attack us so they get them an excuse to go to Iraq.
Yep. It seems to make perfect sense. Now, the document is, from what I noticed, Canestraro here, he's the declarant. So he declares the following. It's on 22 pages. Most of it is critical of the CIA. I haven't read it in detail, but it does sort of dovetail with what we're saying here, that a lot of this was allowed to happen. So I would love to get your opinion on this and how you saw it.
Yeah, let's do another show on that, Mike.
Yeah.
By
because,
the way, did you say the last time you were on was June 22?
No. The last time we were on, the three of us, was, I think, just before Christmas. That's why I was waiting for the Three Mics Christmas special.
No,
we might have to do the Corpus Christi special. No, I know. But the first time that I was with you guys was in June, and a lot has changed since then.
Wow,
but,
man, that's a long time. I'm like, oh, gosh, I'm getting old.
does Canestraro give any of his family information or background? There was a There's a former Canestrero who was very senior at
the You know what? I know which Canestrero you're referring to, but it's not that one. It's a different Canestrero. Actually, his last name is spelled differently. All right. But he goes into a lot of details here. You know, he uses some of the guys are classified here, so he only uses instead of names like CS11 or MMM. Yeah. But as I said, it's 22 pages. I'm going to send it to Colonel Mike. Colonel Mike forwarded to Dr. Scheuer, and I'd really love to have a discussion about this. A lot of interesting.
Yeah, let's do it, Mike. And you could just text me anytime. Come back, you know.
Yeah, I mean, perfect.
Yeah, you know, we follow each other on the Twitter thing.
Sure, sure. Yeah,
I'm sure. You watch a couple of our shows, and we get busy sometimes, Mike. So I've forgive us. You know what I mean? We get so busy. It's amazing how many guests want to come on this show. It's just amazing. It's amazing.
Well, I'm waiting for Orange Band to come on. Then you guys really have to have me on. Then I'm going to be calling into studio. You know, no other option.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen. We put you on him with him, you, and the two of us. Be fine.
That'd be perfect. That'd be perfect.
Hey Mike. Orange Man was on the radio station Mike and I started out with about 13 mm-hmm. years ago. He was on that radio station I heard in the last 2 weeks, and.
With John Fredericks?
No, I won't say it on the air. I'll tell you
offline. Okay. All right, all right.
Compare his views on YouTube, like 32 or 40 on YouTube, okay, or his rumbles compared to us.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the moon versus the wagon, the horse and wagon, right? So
yeah.
When I heard he was on that radio station the other day, I said, oh, no, that means we can't bring him on now for a while, because if we get him on, it'll just take our rating down. Mike used to get, when we were on the radio station, Mike mm-hmm. would get 250,000 views on YouTube in 1 week. It's just one week.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. I mean, you were at the center of the storm, Mike, in a lot of these issues. So, I mean, just listening to especially the relevant information pertaining to, you know, 9/11 terrorism. And by the way, to all our listeners, if you haven't read, selfish promotion here, right? I know Dr. Scheuer, but guys, if you haven't read Osama bin Laden by Mike Scheuer, read the damn book. You will not read a better biography. Fantastic research, and it'll open up your eyes to a lot of new things. I read it last year while sitting by the lake, eating Polish sausage and horseradish and buns, and it was the best book I could read to such a fine meal. So really a treat for the intellect. Highly recommend.
You know, you're very kind, Michael. Yeah, he just said it. He had 10 chances to take out bin Laden. Now, we won't get into the detail and description of how he does things or how he did things. But, you know, he ran teams. This guy's no amateur. You know, he's no amateur. Mike has a very illustrious background, and he's a great co-host and partner. And now we're going on 14 years. And Mike, just June, we're going to be 4 years on the podcast. Almost 400 shows, Krupa. Almost 400 shows in 4 years, man.
Well, you know what I think we can do also, because as you know, I have my own podcast going right now on YouTube, Votum TV. So maybe I can invite you guys over to my end at some time, and we can discuss some relevant information for about an hour. I don't know, 9/11.
Anytime you want, no problem.
Or the latest shenanigans of Hunter, because I know he's been to Ireland lately. So who knows what he did there, if you know what I mean.
Oh, well, don't they have a new prime minister with a husband? The husband has a husband.
The husband has a husband. Yeah, like, what's his name? Elton John. Elton John, yeah.
Well, I guess all you can do is pray and hope. And like me, when I come down the stairs in the morning, I check the temperature and see if St. Paul is coming up the road.
Well, I remember
seeing him.
Because you know what you have to do, Dr. Mike? You got to go to Damascus. You got to be right. On a horse. That's what you got to do. It'll happen in Syria, not in Virginia, in Syria.
You're right. You're right.
The road to Damascus, Paul, Mike, the road to Damascus, and then get thrown off.
Exactly.
Hey, Mike Krupa, thanks, man. Thanks for coming back on.
Terrific, Mike. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gents. We'll be in contact. And let's get things moving on for another interview. And I hope to invite you.
Send me the information for your podcast. We'll put it in the footnotes.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah, no problem. I'll get it right to you after the show. Perfect.
Thanks, Mike. Have a good day.
You guys have a good day. Take care. God bless you. Bye-bye.